Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. You're now live on the Middlemen Talk Show, and this is the Middlemen, and I'm Alan.
It's Kevin.
This is Nick.
And this is Jim.
Morning, Jim.
Hi.
Hey, you there?
I've been on a vacation.
I was on the album. Yeah, rather long vacation. When y'all say that?
I would tend to agree.
What?
Just saying. On vacation. She was in jail where I was, man.
Everything is good. Happy to be off of work tomorrow for Labor Day.
I wish.
I know. Do y'all have any, like, Labor Day plans? Are y'all cooking? Kev, are you cooking out?
No.
What?
No. What?
No. Not feeling too good.
This is a first.
Talk about that, bro. Huh?
This is a first.
Fire. No, I ain't cooking nothing. Not feeling well.
We're supposed to have, like, a really bad storm come through Georgia, so I don't know about the rest of you guys, but I think that's going to put a damper in a lot of people's Labor Day plans.
Not me.
What you got planned, Nick?
I got nothing planned. I'll be working.
On Labor Day?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that, like, against the law?
Nope. No, not at all.
Can't make no money sitting down.
Well, you could, but it just depends on what your chosen profession is. That's a whole nother topic for a whole nother show. I'm just saying.
Wow. Well, so, after the end of the Little Man Talk Show, we have a very open discussion type show. I want to thank everybody for listening and tuning in. Make sure you continue to tell a friend about our talk show. We are on every Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Every Thursday, we have Talk of the Town with Nick Eden at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And we have a great show planned for this Thursday, so y'all make sure y'all tune into these updates that we're going to send out about this Thursday. So we have a special guest that we will have on the show this Thursday, and I'm pretty sure you all will like the upcoming show on Talk of the Town, as many of our other shows that you all would like as well, too. But shout out to all the victims, you know, with the hurricane. Hope everybody is doing well from the hurricane that came through last week. Everyone on the East Coast, everybody is doing all right. And then the government did an appropriate job this time, I would say, as far as reacting and getting people out in a fashionable time for the hurricane, but I want to get
not in the court of Fox News.
Well, right. That's where I want to get into that. You know, as far as Fox News and our President Obama, and of course, we over here, we don't like Fox News. I don't care if anybody out there who works for Fox News listening to the Middlemen Talk Show, we don't like. Well, I don't like it. I can't say if I don't. On the show, but I don't like Fox.
Go past that. I don't respect Fox News because they report false information. Like, you know, it's a responsibility as a media person, as and someone from media, to provide accurate and correct information, and they blatantly tell lies, and you can't respect that.
Right.
Well, as Deb will so eloquently say, stab yourself. I watch Fox News.
Right. And when, you know, with the hurricane and things were, like, going on, and of course they, you know, a lot of news talk shows were actually just reviewing, you know, how the government reacted. Of course, a lot of things that Fox News will point out was very negative, and I don't understand that, but that's something that they always have been doing, you know, since President Obama has been in office. I really didn't pay too much to Fox News until President Obama was elected. I don't think, really, a lot of people didn't pay too much to Fox News until President Obama was elected. You know, we've been going over, you know, the election, you know what I'm saying, for the last couple of weeks, because it's getting down to crunch time for 2012. We got to prepare for all of this. We've been telling everybody to make sure that you vote, go out and vote, get an absentee ballot, go ahead and get yourself registered, and then fashionable time, get that ballot done. Make sure you go and review your candidates, read up about them, talk to people about them. Do your history. Then you want to comment on that? Anything new that you have seen on the political side of things?
Would that be me? I'm sorry.
I think we lost Jen, but one second we'll get her back in. But we're going to go ahead and identify what we're going to discuss today. We have an interesting topic that we're going to do today for everyone who wants to all participate. If you have any comments, concerns, make sure you dial 718-508-9972. The title of today's show is The New Negro. Now, this topic was actually brought to us by our man, Nikita, you know, which was a great topic. We jumped on it as soon as he was explaining it, and it was very interesting. Some of the things in which we discussed on our previous shows from years back, we can actually pull that information into this particular show as well, too. But Nick came at it at a very, very good angle. So the description for the show: in a rare 1957 interview with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., on the new Negro, he was quoted saying, "Time might make us forget the fine line we had to walk." That is a powerful quote. Now, it seems that 50 years plus later, those words have become true. Now, read that particular quote again. It states that time might make us forget the fine line we had to walk. You can break that down however you want it. It's very self-explanatory. Now, some of the things which we're going to discuss today is what has the new black man gained in comparison to what has been lost. And basically, we want to talk about with that particular question, as far as the new generation of black men versus the black men of 50 years ago. We want to discuss as far as what they have gained and also what has been lost through those transitional years. Also, does the new black man or woman desire to see in corporate America to justify his or her failure with the black family? And also, if the old Negro and the new Negro met face to face, what would be the end result? What would the conversation be like? What would they talk about? What would they discuss? How would they compare and contrast themselves? What would, you know, what would be the final ending point to their discussion? We want to know what you all feel about those six questions, and also what you all feel about today's show topic. So if you're on the chat board, place your comments there. We'll definitely get to them. And if you want to call in and place your comment on the air, the number is 718-508-9972. We have a great show for you all. I want to thank everybody for listening to the Middleman Talk Show. We are starting, so you can still send a text message out to all your friends and tell them to come in and listen to the Middleman Talk Show. If you're on Twitter, make sure you retweet those tweets that we send out and bring other people who want to talk about this particular topic today. So Anything, guys?
Don't trust them new narrows over there. That's all I got.
I knew he was gonna say that.
Don't trust them.
Now,
all I got to say today.
As far as what today's topic, we're gonna go ahead and get right into. We got some clips that we're gonna play for you all today as well. That is in relation to the today's topic. But we're gonna go ahead and get into what sparked this particular segment for today. Nick had a interesting episode today that he witnessed and which sparked this particular episode. Nick, you want to elaborate more and tell our listeners about what made you want to bring this show to the air?
Well, basically, I was in the airport in Atlanta and I ran across this display of Dr. Martin Luther King. So I got to looking at it, and he had this one thing about him talking about the new Negro. Well, I said, well, let me look this up, see what it's all about. And I just got to thinking, I was like, well, what would happen, honestly, what would happen if it was like that episode of the Boondocks where Dr. King didn't die, he was just in a coma. And he woke up years later and saw what the world had become. Saw what we did with everything that they fought for, you know, the right to have, you know, equal place in the job, the right to sit where they wanted to on the bus. You know, now we just sit back in the back of the bus because we want to. You know, oh, we fought so hard for you guys to get the right to vote, and we don't vote. Oh, we fought so hard for you guys to have equal placement in the jobs, and we don't even want to go out and get jobs now.
Right.
So I said, you know, what would the original new Negro that he spoke of the 60s, say to the new Negro of the new millennium? And that's just what kind of sparked the conversation, and honestly, it just made me think, right? What would they say to each other? Would they fight? No.
Conversation would be very mind-blowing. Now, you know, it's, you know, all the things in which you pointed out as far as what our ancestors fought for us. I mean, even with school, you know, we have kids that take school for granted, especially like, you know, junior high school years. They take school for granted, and then next thing they know, they're trying to figure out what's going to be the next step. Now, we have done previous shows, and we have saw reports that, you know, African Americans have increased as far as being, what's the word I'm looking for? Increase the numbers of going to college, put it that way, and graduating from college. But we still see that there is a common trend that a lot of children take school for granted. You know, they go to school, they play, they don't do their work, they're not learning anything. When you ask them something about what they learned, you know, they can't tell you anything, but our ancestors had to fight to go to school, to fight to get new textbooks, to fight to get on a school bus and be safe to go to school without anybody bothering them. You know, the fight to eat in a lunchroom with regular, you know, with all races. And now, you know, they're in a lunchroom with all races and they're fighting each other. You know, so, I mean, it's we see that there are a lot of things in which I feel that our generation has lost due to where we are now as far as in technology, where we are now as far as with us being able to get jobs and being able to provide better for our family. But it appears that we, you know, in some cases we forgot where we came from, and we forgot what we're still trying to progress to.
Look at it like this. I think there is an overall, you know, I hate to generalize, but it's common across the board. There's a general lack of respect for the older generation. You know, it's just a general lack of respect for older people in general. And I think that's a shame. I think it's tragic. And I think of everything that we have now and how we wouldn't be able to organize ourselves the way that they did if we tried. Prime example, the Montgomery Improvement Association. I attended Alabama State University, which at the time was Alabama State teacher's college during the civil rights movement, the Montgomery bus boycott. The one thing, because, of course, the news outlets in the city weren't going to cover it. So what they did was they enlisted the help of some students from Alabama State, and they used the Hornet Tribune, which is the school's newspaper, to print out information about the Montgomery bus boycott. Now, flash forward to 2011. We have blogs. We have internet radio. Everyone has cell phones. We have everything you could possibly think of to reach. We have Facebook. We have Twitter. We still have MySpace. Everything you can think of to reach a group of people to inform them about something that's going on. And I guarantee you, if we attempted to put something together like that today, we wouldn't be able to do it. Mm-hmm. So it's like we gained all of this, but at the cost of what? You know, we had a sense of unity at one point that we no longer have. There was a sense of black pride. There was a sense of, say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud. And the funny thing about it is, if you look at all the other minorities in the country, they still have that sense of unity, largely inspired by us.
And I think also they have a sense of ancestry, where we have a sense, where I think we've lost that, where you, like before, you know, you always owed it to the people that came before you to do better than them. And now I think that's a big part of it, too, where a lot of our generation doesn't have any sense of, you know, that they owe anybody anything. They don't owe, you know, our ancestors anything. They don't have to do good because everyone is out of self. I'm only for self. I only think of self.
Right. There you go.
Over here on the web chat, man, kind of a man was having a conversation. He was saying that the black community, new Negroes, have split into four separate communities. And I asked him to list them, and this is his opinion right here for what he would say. The first one is the ghetto, which represented by the hip-hop and reality shows, gangs, drugs, dropouts, and baby mamas. The second one is the middle class, working class, graduates, families, churchgoers, and voters. The third ones are hoteps, 40 acres and a mule, everything is a conspiracy, Freemasons, Boule, Illuminati, and etc. His fourth opinion is the black Republicans that sided with white folks against black people. I want to know what y'all think about that.
I think that's a very interesting way to look at it. Actually, I kind of agree. Yeah, I really do. I think he's right on point with that.
I think he's
because, you know, I always get mad when people look at people and they be like, well, they represent black people. And I'll be like, well, that's not a representation of me. I don't equate, I guess, certain, you know, you look at a Flavor Flav show or you look at certain people and I don't equate their actions to being black when some people do, you know. And so, like, I agree that there's different sectors.
But the one thing I can honestly say is I'm a big proponent of personal accountability. Yeah, you're right. We have the Flavor Flays and the basketball wives and all the T.O. show and all that stuff. You're right. That's not an accurate description or representation of black people. But we support it in such drones that what other conclusion are they to draw from it? If you try to put something like that on TV back in the 60s, if it were allowed to be on TV back in the 60s, I guarantee you, I absolutely guarantee you, that the black community as a whole would be in an uproar about it.
Well, can I play the devil's advocate for a second? Because a lot of us, I don't say support it, but they watch it because it's entertainment. A lot of white people, a lot of Hispanic people are watching the same thing because it's like, it's buffoonery. It's
Jen,
comical.
Guess what?
It's supposed
to be funny. If you're watching it, you're helping the ratings of it. Therefore, you're supporting
it.
Representation
of me. I don't think Flavor Flav is a representation of me. I see it as, now maybe Joe Smith out in Iowa thinks that Flavor Flav is a representation of all black people, but I see him as just a comedic character on a TV show that's not real. So I don't think that people should take. I think that there's power in ownership. I do not take ownership of ignorance as blackness. I will never do that. If he acts like a buffoon, that's him acting like a buffoon. That's not black people or representation of how black people act. And we need to start taking claim in these things. When you see the Chinese man on that whatever that Verizon or whatever commercial with that big giant panda bear, is he representation of all Asian people? That if I was Asian, would I be offended by that? Y'all know what commercial I'm talking about?
Yes, mm-hmm. I do.
So, like, would you be offended if you saw that commercial? Because no, that's not representation of all Asian people. That's a character, and I will not state claim. They don't state claim in that. They don't take ownership of that. We need to stop taking ownership of these buffoons.
Well, this is my thing about it, Jen. Look at it like this: if it were a sitcom and not a reality show, black people would be up in arms. How dare you write content like that to represent black people? But when it's a reality show, then the ownership isn't there. There's no more ownership then. Then it's, oh, that's just the way they act. Realize how much we influence the world. When
yeah.
they see that
I
we support something, they latch on to it. And like I said, you may look at it as entertainment, but the thing about it is you're still giving them ratings. Therefore, you're still supporting it because the advertisers are coming in on it because they believe, okay, the ratings are there. That means people want to watch it. Hey, it's showing up great in black households. Let's be real about something. When you see those type of TV shows, look at the commercials that come up there afterwards. They are geared towards minorities.
True.
They are geared towards minorities.
I
told radio advertisers for a long time. The one thing I know about advertising is it is specific to a program. It's very specific to a program. They're looking to lock in a certain demographic to sell their products.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at those commercials, they're geared towards us. So we are supporting it. Therefore, we are embracing it. We know
yeah.
who
let
won
me,
Flavor
me,
of Love,
let me,
but we don't know the last black woman that won Miss America.
Right.
I agree to you. I agree with you to a point. But I'm just saying I don't take ownership of buffoonery as blackness.
All right. Let me ask you all this question, too, and this is for everyone who is listening to the Internet Talk Show today. If you want to get in on the conversation, make sure you dial 718-508-9972 and press the number 1 on your phone, and we'll get to you. But the question I want to ask about that, you know, since we're bringing up buffoonery and TV shows and how minorities are portrayed in every aspect of media, what effect does that have on the teenage youth growing out of the teenage years into adulthood, because a lot of them are still trying to find themselves, and a lot of them take on the mode of what they see on television or a character who they want to be like or a position who they want to be like. Now, I know that back when our ancestors were growing up, they wanted to be like either their grandfathers or their fathers or somebody who was actually working hard trying to take care of their family. Nowadays, you know, our role models are different. You know, we have more role models who are, you know, athletes, musicians, actors, etc. But then all of a sudden, we also see tabloids. We also see things on television as far as sex tapes, scandal, money laundering, drug busts, going in and out of prison all the time. Is this something that in relation to the black male in the 60s versus now, this would be part of that particular conversation? I would think, when y'all think so?
I do. I think that there's more conversation needs to be had with children. Like, why is that rap star or why is that athlete your hero? You know, beyond it has to be beyond their just, you know, their musical talent or their athletic ability. It has to be, you know, people understand what a hero is. And, you know, before, you know, I remember So Sweet, where even my sister said, you know, my mother is her hero because she sees her work hard. Or, you know, people need to plant what a hero is into children's brain and have more better examples of people in our community. We talk about that all the time on this show, how we need to have more people in our community getting out there and reaching out on a personal level. You know, you don't have to be this super duper person, but just talking to someone that you see that may need help, you know, that's being a hero.
Nick, you want to chime in on that?
Yeah. I get what you're saying, Jim. This is my issue. If you took all of the images that are portrayed of black people, because now we're doing it to ourselves. It's not just the media doing it. We're doing it to ourselves. If you took all the images like that and you put it in one room, all of those characters that we see, all these things that are quote-unquote for the purposes of entertainment or keeping it real or whatever, and you put someone from the 60s, i.e. a Dr. King in that room, what do you think he would say? What do you think he would say? You got to realize these people were bitten by dogs, beaten by police, sprayed with water hoses, and it was all legal. There was no police brutality. So what do you think if all those guys were in the room and Dr. King was standing there, what do you think he would say?
I think he would be disgusted with us. I really do. I think he would be saddened by people. I think that, you know, we're not living in a time, well, most of us don't. Some of us might, if you're in certain areas of the country, live in a place with police brutality. But most of us don't experience that because we live in a different age. However, racial inequality and discrimination has just taken a different shape and form. And instead of, you know, getting our battle gear up like the generations before us, we just sit back and take it and complain and only scrap for ourselves. And I think that our ancestors, our Medgar Evers, our Dr. Kings, I think they would really cry at the state that we have led our people get into, where we have forgotten the we, and we just look at the I.
Right. We have a clip that we want to get into, and this is actually a clip from a Boondocks episode with Martin Luther King Jr. If you remember the episode, this is when Martin Luther King Jr. came out of a coma, and he saw what was actually going on, and he just had it up to here with it, and he just really just let people hear what he felt about what he saw since he has been in a coma. So, Kev, you want to go ahead and get that clip for us, please?
All right.
Excuse me, brothers and sisters, please. If someone could just turn off.
King looked out on his people and saw they were in great need. So he did what all great leaders do. He told them the truth.
Will you ignorant nigga please shut the hell up?
He just said what I think he said.
Is this it? This is what I got all those ass whippings for. I had a dream once. It was a dream that little black boys and little black girls would drink from the river of prosperity, freed from the thirst of oppression. But lo and behold, some four decades later, what have I found but a bunch of trifling, shiftless, good-for-nothing niggas. And I know some of you don't want to hear me say that word. It's the ugliest word in the English language. But that's what I see now. Niggas. And you don't want to be a nigger. Because niggas are living contradictions. Niggas are full of unfulfilled ambitions. Niggas wax and wane. Niggas love to complain. Niggas love to hear themselves talk but hate to explain. Niggas love being another man's judge and jury. Niggas procrastinate until it's time to worry. Niggas love to be late. Niggas hate to hurry. Black entertainment television is the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. Usher, Michael Jackson is not a genre of music. And now I'd like to talk about soul playing. I've seen what's around the corner. I've seen what's over the horizon. And I promise you, you niggas have nothing to celebrate. And no, I won't get there with you. I'm going to Canada.
And that was the Boondocks clip with Martin Luther King Jr. when he had woke up out of the coma. Let's get back to the conversation.
Hey,
let's talk about that particular clip. Go ahead.
Before you get into that, yo, kind of a man over here, man. Like I said, if y'all on the web chat, on the internet, get you a profile so you can get into this conversation. Kind of a man in Black Man 37 over here saying some very interesting points, man. Kind of a man was saying that the new Negro would say that Dr. King was too soft and that he need a nigga moment. I wonder what y'all think about that. And also, Black Man 37 said the new Negro is, number one, wealthy, rich, and three, the N-word. That's his opinion on that one.
You know what's so crazy? And I absolutely respect and I love when Black Man 37 calls in, but there's one thing I have to say that I disagree with. That number one thing he said, wealthy. There's a reason that we won't be wealthy. There's a difference between rich and wealthy. Kobe Bryant is rich. The owner of the Lakers is wealthy. There's a big difference between that. Wealth is long, old money that's passed down from generation to generation. And all those generations have worked hard to preserve that wealth. That's what we're trying to say. That his original vision for the new Negro was that, okay, now that we're getting these things that we have fought long and hard for, let's take the mentality that we have now and build generations and generations of wealth so that we never find ourselves a slave to anyone again, whether that be in the body or in the mind. And right now, oh, we got the money, but we're still slaves in the mind. And they say, you know what, that's fine. We'll let the bodies go. You don't have to get out there and pick the cotton anymore. We'll let the bodies go, but we're always going to have your mind.
That's true, Nick. I agree, because, like, you know, even in the description, that fine line that Martin Luther King talks about is exactly what you just said. We've given away our mind, you know, not our bodies. You know, they ain't taking the body. Yep. They ain't, you ain't getting beat down at work no more. You know, you substitute a lot of your substance for money. And a lot of new Negroes, and there's nothing wrong with having money by any means. Nothing wrong with having money by any means, but I think the principles of what and who we are, we tend to forget very quick.
I just think that a lot of us, you know, find ourselves, I think, like back in slavery, you know, a lot of them describe, like, the house Negroes or whatever as, you know, you're grateful and glad for the crumbs that the master give you, and you eat them up, you know, but you have to realize they're crumbs. And I think that a lot of what we get are crumbs, and we don't realize it. Like, you know, a lot of people don't know the difference between rich and wealthy. And so when they're presented that, they're just happy with that money, but it's not real.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. My thing is it worth it? Is it worth it to lose the family values that we had? Is it worth it to lose the unity that we had? Like, for everything we've gained, is it worth what we've lost? Or have we become just as corrupt and just as bad as the people that were oppressing us years ago? Because now we do it to our own people. Because, just like Jen said earlier, we have this constant me mentality. It's all about me. Is it really worth losing everything that we fought so hard for and everything that we value so much? Because that money is not going to last forever. You can't take it with you. One thing I heard today, I talked to an older gentleman today, and he said, if you weren't born with it, it doesn't belong to you. You can't take that stuff with you anywhere. And I thought back to a clip that Eddie Griffin, the comedian Eddie Griffin, said. He was like, yeah, you can't take this money with you. The Egyptians tried to take the money with it, and now guess what? Their dead bodies are on tour. And everybody else in the free world has their money that was theirs, all that wealth. So is it worth losing it? Is it worth losing everything that's really the real wealth, the wealth of your family, the wealth of a legacy, of generations and generations? Is it worth losing it just to say, I got mine?
But you know what, y'all? I want us to take a step back and define to everyone that just tuning in and everything, what is a new Negro in your opinion? What is a new Negro? Because there are a lot of people out there that really don't even look at that term as a reality of what it is now. You know, we just looked at it as we've progressed beyond where our grandparents were and where our great-grandparents were. So what is a new Negro to each one of you guys?
I have to agree with the person on the web chat where, you know, I don't know if I break them down in those specific ones, but I think that we've broken up, the new Negro has, you know, progressed into several different categories. But I think one thing that's kind of universal that may stretch, you know, throughout all categories that you may split them up in, is that the new Negro has forgotten, a lot of us have forgotten the consciousness of that, you know, who we are and what it means to be black and what it means to be the responsibility of being black. And I think that a lot of people forget that, and a lot of people don't even take on that responsibility, or even worse yet, see the need to.
Right. I would say they don't have identity, because their identity comes from what they see on television, who is put right in front of them. Their identity comes from the majority race, which is white America. One thing that I have a problem with, and, you know, and I laugh at sometimes, but that's what, you know, I can't knock how somebody grew up. But when I walk past, you know, a black male and he's with a bunch of white guys and his personality is just like the white guys, he laughs like them, talks like them, says dude, and like he uses all those phrases. But when you put him in a room with other African-American males, he turns back into his real, like his real self. You know, I don't like that. Be yourself every day, all day. You don't have to portray yourself in a certain way to be accepted by a group that you want or think that you want to be associated with. That's one thing I feel like the new Negro, well, the definition of a new Negro is that they lack identity.
You know what I think the new Negro is? And this is going to sound a little out the box. The new Negro, to me, is honestly the old house slaves.
There you go.
The master has chosen me to have a little bit more than you. So I'm going to separate myself from you because you're part of the have-not. And I'm going to separate myself from you because... in my opinion and in my mind and by what my master says, I'm better than you. So I'm not going to help you escape. I'm not going to help you learn to read or write or count. All I'm going to do is I'm going to hold you down because I've got mine, and that's all I'm concerned about. And to me, that's
and
what
I even help the master kill my people because he might give me two more crumbs.
The new Negro is the dude off of Life that say, you lucky, I ain't nice like Boss. I'll slap the black off your ass.
Yep.
Well, this is my opinion. I'm about to piss all y'all off. A new Negro to me is one that looks back, like y'all said. It's in context of what you guys were saying. But to me, a new Negro is the one that looks back and say a lot of the things y'all just said about black folks. They look back and look down on them. Those are the new Negroes, the ones that have forgotten who they are and where they come from, in my opinion.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? So if
it.
We look back,
that's
and
right.
I know me and Jen, we got into it a while ago about, you know, certain things she won't claim as being black or whatever the case may be. Those are things that are in our community. And when you look back at them and say, that's not a part of me, who I am better than, then therefore a lot of times you looked upon as that new Negro in just a general context.
Well, let me be the new Negro then. Because you know what? The black people that I see that are representations of black people to me are not black people out there misrepresenting themselves, you know, as being whorish or being, you know, these gangsters or whatever. That is a decision that person made for their life, and their decision for negativity is not equating to black people to me, because that's not the black people I have seen.
Well, how about this then? Let's play this clip right here, and I want everybody to pay attention to this one. This is a clip from 1957. This clip was done with Dr. Martin Luther King. I shortened it up a little bit so it can make sense and also fit the content of what we're talking about right now. This is Dr. Martin Luther King talking about the new Negro of 1957. Once we get finished with this, y'all make sure to compare to what we think a new Negro is now and what he say a new Negro represent in 1957. This is Blog Talk Radio, the Middleman Talk Show, this Sunday.
First, ask you, Dr. King, in your estimation, what and who is this new Negro?
I think I could best answer that question by saying first that the new Negro is a person with a new sense of dignity and destiny, with a new self-respect. Along with that, is this lack of fear, which once characterized the Negro, this willingness to stand up courageously for what he feels is just and what he feels he deserves on the basis of the laws of the land. I think also included would be this self-assertive attitude that you just mentioned. And all of these factors come together to make what seems to me to be the new Negro. I think also I would like to mention this growing honesty which characterizes the Negro today. There was a time that the Negro used duplicity, a deception to, rather as a survival technique. Although he didn't particularly like conditions, he said he liked them because he felt that the boss wanted to hear that. But now from the housetops, from the kitchen, from the classrooms, and from the pulpits, the Negro says in no uncertain terms that he doesn't like the way he's being treated. So at long last, the Negro is telling the truth. And I think this is also one of the basic characteristics of the new Negro.
Now, that is Dr. Martin Luther King back in 1957. If y'all took notes and paid attention to those characteristics of what he thought a new Negro is, how does that contrast to what we're talking about today?
I got something very interesting from that clip where I thought that he said previously before the – what year did this clip come out?
1957.
Before 1957, in previous years, he talked about the deception of the Negro and so have you, and he used deception as a form of survival. And if you think back, you know, at the harshness of that time was even more – Jim Crow was even more – harsh, and you know, it was probably a couple decades after Reconstruction, and you know, everything was really, really bad. But you know, I think that it's interesting to think that now I think this generation has reverted back to that. So, does that mean, like, I'm asking you guys, does that mean that our situation, you know, I guess towards other races or how we're treated, has it reverted back to that the worst treatment, but it's just taken a different form? You get what I'm saying?
It is somewhat a different form. I think it goes back to what Al was saying, just in his definition of the new Negro. It was right on point with what Dr. King was saying. The duplicity now is not for survival. It's for advancement.
Mm-hmm. Which is now survival. Because if you're not, quote unquote, the rich, or if you don't have certain material things, you're shunned in this society.
Okay, well, if that's the case, then why don't you ask an Indian man who, along with his family, own and operate a Budget Inn and got credit scores and bank accounts that will make you cry at your corporate job because they're killing you because they're working like blue-collar workers, but they're working together. Why don't you ask the Pakistani man who owns a 7-Eleven, owns his own business, and his credit score and his bank account makes you cry when you go to your corporate job? And I'm not saying you in general, I'm saying all of us in general. You know, material things, that's the problem. We're putting too much on material things. If you look at the wealthy, they're wealthy for a reason. I'm not going to keep spending my money on things that depreciate.
And the key thing that you said, Nick, was that they are working together. They're working together. We working against each other all the time.
We're the only race that doesn't work together.
Of life.
Hey, we do have a comment right here. A caller that's calling in that would like to give a comment in. Caller 402, you're live on the Middleman Talk Show.
Greetings, family.
What's up, man?
Still learning, bro. Still learning.
Pac-Man 37, right?
Yes, sir. I was going to say that survival, as this was saying, was for survival. Survival back in the time meant food, water, shelter, and clothing. You needed that to survive to get to the next day, the next week, the next month. Material things is not survival nowadays. Material things is I want to have. to show off. Show offism. That's all that is.
But people are dying for show offism. Look at the kids that are murdering each other for shoes or clothes or, you know, like robbing stores. Look at those kids who are ruining their life for those things. And a lot of kids think, I'm not saying it is survival because I don't believe that, but a lot of kids have that mentality. If I don't have these things, it means so much to them that they will risk their lives or their freedom for it.
Well, they risk their lives and freedoms for it. However, survival for us, especially also on this phone, we understand that survival actually means you need the necessities in order to survive, or you will basically just die off, or you won't be able to make it. So, but I can understand your point, but no, that's because they want to show off and to impress someone else so they can say, see, I got it too.
Pac-Man 37, I want to ask you a question. Could you explain your listing as far as what you think a new Negro is as far as the wealthy, the rich, and the N-words? Why did you come up with that combination?
Because the wealthy, because wealthy is a small class. As we know, it's a small group of individuals on the planet. And the wealthy, especially among us, I'm talking about billionaires now.
Uh-huh.
That's what I consider wealthy, billionaires, is that they have pretty much done like you were saying. I mean, they would pretty much sell their soul and make sure that they continue to sell their soul so they can have greater wealth, greater access to resources.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So that's why I named the wealthy as number one, because they would do anything, even if they have to keep black people's foot on their neck.
True.
That are lower class to do it. If they have to sell out their family, if they have to have their family killed, they'll do it. I think they called him the Bolle. Next, moving on. I put the rich up there because some of the rich will do the same thing. Some of us as rich black people, to be rich, will do anything. Even if I have to prostitute myself, even if I have to sell out my own people, even if I have to do whatever I have to do, lie, deceive, murder, to get there, because I want to live and have what this so-called thing called the American dream, the illusion. So some of them are actors in Hollywood. Some of them will become homosexuals just to have greater wealth or to become rich.
Wow.
Okay. Now, when I said the N-word, you know, these are brothers, normal brothers on the street that are ignorant, that choose not to want to learn to become better. They like the thug life. They like this whole negative image thing because that is what they have embodied, and they believe that's the way of life, even females. So, I mean, women in these three categories as well. Some women will sell themselves. They'll sell their soul. They'll sell their body just to become wealthy.
That's for that money.
Become rich.
Yep.
Just
for that
money.
Even worse, their children. Even worse, their children.
Yeah, and even worse, their children. And you know what? That's sick and sad. Even their own children. Some of them are part of some of these cults. They'll even sacrifice their own damn children just to have access to resources. That's what the new Negro has become.
Keeping in line with our first question of the day.
Yes, sir.
It seems to be, it's just like you said, they will sacrifice all of this. And more than that, does it outweigh what we've lost as a society? Because in some people's mind, it's justified.
I think it's not. Is it worth
all the loss that we've taken?
To those with that mindset or that satanic mindset, yes. It is worth it because, see, I can live comfortably. See, I can show off to everybody else what I have. I can brag. I can be right up here with the other ones who really have that control of the access of resources and money. I can sit with them and say, hi, how are you? You know what? I got my yacht today, too. Bill, Dick, Jim, Bradley. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Even up with the Jones.
Yeah.
That's right. I got to keep up with them because they are the ones that have the greater access to power. They have the greater access to wealth, to resources on the planet. I've got to be close to these people because I'm not important unless this wealthy white man says I'm important. And if I can't be up there with him, then I'm not important.
So you would say that would translate to people that are in the ghettos, where the reason why they would have that mind state of, I got to keep up with the Joneses. I got to have the freshest kicks and the biggest rims and all these things. But is that just a conditioning factor, or Is that just the reality of what we have going on in our society right now, especially black society?
The American dream is a conditioning of all people, especially to black. It's just we express it a little differently than everybody else. This is somebody white, you know, they express it by having, you know, the biggest house or the way they may dress, the way they may speak and the way they use their words and the way they conduct themselves in a certain way. They don't get out. They don't have to go out and get the rims. They usually show their wealth by the type of car they buy, the type of house they have or the houses they have or the yacht or whatever else, jewelry.
Let's look at it like this. The American dream, let's not front about it. The American dream changed. If you remember, the original American dream was freedom. It was freedom. And everyone who came to the United States of America, everyone who came to this country, with the exception of African Americans and the Native Americans that were already there, already here, everyone else came to escape some type of oppression that they were dealing with in their home countries. But somewhere along the line, they conveniently changed the American dream from freedom to wealth.
During the capitalist movement in this country.
Off a book. The phrase was, the American dream was actually coined off a book called, I guess, American Lifestyle or something like that. And somebody coined it the American dream. So at one point, it was freedom. I think they still say it's freedom. But under that, it's material. It's wealthy. It's being rich is the true American dream, because then you can have everything you want and you don't have to worry about anything anymore because you have all this money.
That's true, man. We appreciate you for your call and your comment, man. We're going to go ahead and keep it moving.
You.
If you have any other comment, man, just press that number one again and we will definitely bring you back in.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. To all our other listeners that are listening on the phone line or via the internet, the number is 718-508-9972. You can press that number one, or if you're on the web, go over to our web chat, get you a profile, and let's keep the conversation going over there also. Go ahead, Nick.
Well, I was just going to say, we definitely appreciate Black Man 37 for his comment, but it actually segues into our next question of the day, and that is, does the new black man or woman desire to succeed in corporate America, does their desire to succeed in corporate America justify their failure with the black family? There's an abandonment issue in terms of career. For some reason, as a whole, not everyone, but just in general, the higher up in corporate America that we have become, the more and more we have gotten away from our family, our family values.
I think our values as a people in itself, I don't know how many people out there, especially African Americans, that work in corporate America, but I think especially for us in corporate America, I think it takes a little out of you to work in that environment. I don't know about every company or every job, but I've worked a couple corporate jobs, and I just think that the person that you have to become, the things that you have to swallow to survive, the things that you hear, the racial comments, the this and that, and you have to swallow them and keep going, all in the namesake of moving up the corporate ladder or keeping your job. And if you say something or have an opinion or stand up for your people, you lose your job or you're at risk of being kicked out of that world. And I think it's very hard to be a conscious person of what's going around in your community and continue to work in corporate America.
Yeah, but a lot of, my opinion on this, yo, is that I feel that a lot of new Negroes don't care about their communities. As you guys stated earlier, it's all about the me. It's all about the I. Once they get in those positions, they're not looking back to reach down and help somebody else. Like you said, because of the unwarranted issues that they'll have in the office with other people and the corporate heads up, you know, the execs and whatnot. So you look at the new Negro, you know, a lot of times they're very successful, but the fruit that they bear from their tree is very bare. Their tree is very bare. They're not helping out nobody. They don't care.
Right.
You know, so
let me say this.
Another thing too, we're not looking at what the legacy for our generation is going to be. We're not doing anything to increase that. We're not doing anything to change that. Because now the legacy of our generation right now is going to be what? A bunch of more of us becoming musical artists or trying to become
actors. The BET Awards, that's the legacy of our generation.
Exactly. You know, so we don't have
the Coltrane Awards.
There are a small
percentage. Signing that new contract with the Saints.
That's trying to make a good point, man.
But look at it. Look at it from this aspect, and this is what I'm saying. And I maybe I worded it wrong, but when I say the black family, I'm not even just talking about just the black community as a whole. You have people in corporate America that drive a wedge between themselves and their family, or choose not to even try to attempt to start a family because they're so concerned and so enthralled about being in corporate America. Going back to what Jen was just saying. You're right. There's a lot of stuff in corporate America that you have to eat, you have to swallow, you have to deal with all of that. But for me, I know my solace is when I get home and I'm with my family. You only got peace in two places. That's in your home and in the grave. I'm not going to wait till the grave to get my peace. So if anything else, everything that I go through in corporate America, that makes me want to get to my family even more because that's my solace. The second thing, going back to what Jen was saying, I 50% agree with you because, Jen, your example of this yourself. You work in corporate America. However, you work in corporate America, you still take time to volunteer. You still take time to mentor. You still take time to work with political issues. It can be done. It can be done. Yeah. But for a lot of people, especially this new Negro, it's not worth it to them. Because, once again, it goes back to that mentality of I, me. I don't care about anything else, just like Black Man said just a second ago. I'm so concerned about getting the validation from this white man who, honestly, the guy who started the company I'm working for, doesn't have half the education that I have, doesn't have half the natural know-how and business sense that I have. But guess what? 9 times out of 10, if you look at those Fortune 500 companies, most of them were started during a recession or a depression, and most of them with the help of these families. One of the most successful black businesses in the history of this country was Motown Records, and it was started with the help of Berry Gordy's family. He employed his family, and he ran a successful independent record label that changed the face of music over the course of 45 years based on family values. Now, I'm not saying he did everything the right way, but the one thing he never did was he never turned his back on his family.
I want to ask y'all something. Can we blame the quote-unquote white man for the new Negro? Are they a direct result of us having the quote-unquote new Negro of nowadays? Because what King was saying, the new Negro back in his time, that it don't even relate to that.
No, well, I thought that we kind of X'd that out on one of our previous shows because we do have a mind of our own, but due to some of the job criteria and the look of your actual being to get hired on a job and actually what your name sounds like and looks like on a piece of paper, we can somewhat blame white America for some of our...
No. That ain't what I'm talking about. I ain't talking about getting a job. I'm saying... What is the reason why we have this new mentality, the quote unquote Negro,
that's
new
what I'm
Negro
trying to
mentality?
Get at, Kevin.
White
folks
got nothing
Kevin,
to do with
Kevin,
it.
That's what I'm trying to get at because we have to act a certain way to get to where we want to be, Kevin. We have
but
to
that's a choice.
Act proper. We have to cut our hair. We can't wear braids. We are ashamed of our names. Like if we have a long drawn out very unique name, we go with our middle name instead of our first name. We are ashamed of that because we know that we won't get hired somewhere or we won't be accepted some way. Yes.
So why can't we start our own businesses?
We greedy. We don't, we don't look out for others. It's all about me. It's all about my
but,
money.
But,
and hey, not
yeah,
family
that's a
money.
General, that is a general
no,
comment
no.
to say this across
that,
the board that we
that is
not,
a not
all black people agree. I'm not
saying. Can I say this?
I think
hold on, y'all. Let's Jen, go ahead, Jen.
I think this is how white people are involved. I think that Willie Lynch is not that. The Willie Lynch mentality is not that far off. America makes a lot of money off of the ununity and the ignorance of black people. They do. They make millions and billions of dollars off of it, mm-hmm. and they learn how to market it. They learn yep. how to make us new slaves. And the difference between then and now is there were a bunch of people, an overwhelming number of black people that said no, no more. But now, like we said, we discussed earlier in the show, because we get maybe two more crumbs or a gold watch or maybe a new car or some Jordans, you know, we take that treatment. We take what is given to us, and we've turned ourselves into self-inflicted slaves to make white America or the wealthy, the 1% of the world that's wealthy, to continue to make them and their families even more wealthier. And that's what we've done to ourselves.
Well, let's bring Black Man 37 back in. I see you got a comment. Hey, you're back live, my man.
Hey, I was going to say yes and no.
Okay.
Yes, because they right. laid down the foundation for it, and they set up the program to weed and feed mm-hmm. those who will. And then you got the other hand of a lot of those who are, of us who have our minds. So we choose not to allow them to do that to us, and we decide to go the opposite way, although we're going to have it harder.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's in both. It's yes and no. Thank you. Go ahead and say.
We appreciate you. All right. That was a good comment right there. Let's get into the next question right there, y'all. And go ahead, one of you guys going to take the next question. Old Negroes.
Okay, now, as far as with the last question of the day, if the old Negro and the new Negro met face-to-face, what would be the conversation? What would be the end result? What would they talk about? How would they react around each other? How would they look at each other? You know, what would that look like?
Al, I got something for that, man. I want to just let everybody know. These are the things, and we kind of talked about this earlier as far as the gains and the loss, as far as with our communities and the new Negroes and the, you know, as far as back in the day and the ones that we have now. These are some of the things that I believe that the old black man would tell the young black man of the day, that, you know, the quote-unquote new Negro now. These are some of the things he was subjected to. And I'm going to play this clip right here. This is about the rise and the fall of the Jim Crow laws. Once we get past this, we're going to get right back into this conversation. All right, y'all check this out. The Middleman Talk Show on Blog Talk Radio.
Come listen, all you gals and boys. I'm just from Tuckahoe. I'm going to sing a little song. My name's Jim Crow. Wheel about and turn about and do just so. Every time I wheel about, I jump Jim Crow. I went down to the river.
In 1836, Jim Crow is born. He begins his strange career as a malicious minstrel caricature of a black man, created by a white man to amuse white audiences. Jim Crow would come to symbolize one of the most tragic eras of race relations in American history, a time deeply rooted in promise and contradiction. 1865, 4 million Americans, slaves simply because they were born black, were now free. But in little over a decade, that promise was gone, replaced by a rigid system of laws designed to keep blacks from experiencing any of their newly achieved rights. It would be known as the era of Jim Crow, the American form of racial apartheid.
I tried to lean inside and get me a cup of water. And those white people beat me till I was unconscious. They thought I was dead.
My dad said, as long as you're living in this South, you're going to have to go to the back door in this South. Now, you just settled for that. He said, well, one thing I want you to swear and promise to me, that you will never get used to it.
I'm not ashamed of the segregated and Jim Crow experience, all because we were able to devise techniques for survival that permitted us to abide our time and to wait until our change comes.
As most blacks were willing to bide their time, some began to fight back. In the late 1880s and 90s, they embarked on an uncertain campaign to secure voting rights build their own communities, schools, businesses, and churches, and to demand redress against mob violence and lynching. The white supremacists fought back. By 1919, the Ku Klux Klan, which had been a Southern idiosyncrasy, became a national ideology. White supremacy, the power behind Jim Crow, appeared invincible. And over the next decade, the violence against blacks would grow even more horrific. But black Americans continued to battle, using the power of the press and ultimately the power of the courts to pursue their quest for freedom and equality against racism. The rise and fall of Jim Crow is their story, the story of strong men and women who would never accept the demeaning, threatening, and perilous world of Jim Crow. The rise and fall of Jim Crow is the story of those who, in the face of unending terror, achieved triumphs. Triumphs that would in time make America a better place, not just for themselves, but for all of us.
That right there was a chip, the clip of Jim Crow right there, y'all. And it somewhat reflects back on the statement that Martin Luther King said, you know, time might make us forget the fine line that we walk. And it's, you know, we're getting closer and closer back to that fine line again with our youth, with our high echelons, and with our communities in general, that we're going to eventually mess around and fall back into that old ways of what it was. So I think that's one thing that one of our, if you would, like the question posed, the old Negro and the new Negro, the old black and the young black, if he was talking to him, he would have to remind them of the triumphs and tribulations that they went through back in the day. And how dare us forget that? How dare we forget that?
And then you know, the majority of the Negroes, they don't even know about it because the schools don't, of course, they don't expound on it. A lot of their, since we're having children younger and younger every year, those generations are not as well educated on that particular era of what went on back in the civil rights movement. But they wouldn't know. But go ahead, Nick.
Well, I'll just say this, and this may make a couple of people upset. You're right. The old Negro would have to remind him, you know, of what he's done. But you know what's so bad? The arrogance and the ignorance of the new Negro won't allow him to accept that. You have a lot of people nowadays that are conveniently proud to be black and conveniently proud of our ancestry, and they don't bring it up unless they're being discriminated against. We don't care about black history until somebody on Fox News says something wrong about us. Then we're up in arms. We don't care about them talking bad about our politicians on the local level, but let them say something about Barack. Then it's a problem. We are convenient. We're so convenient with our history, and there's no other race on the face of this planet that is just convenient about this. We want to cry racism when it applies to us. We want to cry about the civil rights movement when it applies to our situation at that time. So he wouldn't respect what he had to say. He wouldn't say we had to say all. Honestly, it may end up with him treating the new Negro treating the old Negro no better than white people that age would treat him.
Yeah, and that's you know, just to put it more in context, our youth do not listen to our elders now. And you know, we do have some, I'm going to be honest, in our community, it's us talking. Some of our elders are not worth listening to because they mind is gone. You know, but when you got that great-grandma that's still living, that's trying to tell you right, you need to listen because, like I said, how dare we forget that line, that fine line that Martin Luther King spoke about? How dare we forget that? Because if you look at it, like you said earlier, Nick, we choose to sit at the back of the bus now. People fought against that. You know what I'm saying? We choose to be dumb and people die for us to get into school and read and do all these different things. But we choose to do that. And what is the purpose of us, like you said, fighting the way that we're fighting? And the generation now, they're looking at it like, oh, well, it don't reflect on me right now. So what's the difference?
Not until there's a noose hanging up at the high school. Oh, then we up in arms. Oh,
yeah.
We're going to call
Warren Valentine, and we finna call Al Sharpton, we finna call this Jess. We want everybody to come down there, Michael Bazin, we want all y'all to come down there and rally. Now, because of this one incident, we've been discriminated against when we do it to ourselves every day. Where's your up in arms when we're out there killing each other, or stealing from each other, holding each other down in corporate America? When you, why aren't you up in arms then?
Yep, go ahead, Al.
Well, I just want to say the phone lines are open. You may dial 718-508-9972. But I would say instead of calling all those people, Nick, let's call the common man down there who wants to speak and who has been trying to get his voice out there. We need to call some people who are actually not on that level, but who are, I guess you would say, the public out there to speak. Because, I mean, to call, you know, Al Sharpton and, you know, Michael Bayes and all them, that's fine, willy and nilly. And I don't like Jesse Jackson no more. I mean,
but you know what, dude?
This
is something Black Man 37 was saying on the board. You know, we got a lot of followers and not enough leaders. And my opinion was that we have a lot of leaders, but we're the only people on this earth. Y'all, right now, name me one white leader. Name me a white leader. Name me a Chinese leader.
Yeah.
Name me a Japanese leader. Name me another ethnicity that, quote unquote, have leaders that they throw out in the forefront all the time. Why do we do
that? That's
this?
Right. That's right.
You're talking about one that's not a political figure? See,
not a political. It don't even matter, dude. I don't see any other races when they have an issue. Especially like Jewish people.
Yeah.
Jewish people. When y'all seen a Jewish leader?
Or a spokesperson. A spokesperson for the Jewish people. Like, they don't
have
one spokesperson.
That's
but
right. That's why I said, you know, we don't need that. We need the public. Like, we need, like a common person, man. We don't need all that. You know, it's like one person does not represent us. One person cannot speak for us.
We are not a monolithic race.
There we go. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank
on top of that, all of us are leaders. That's just my opinion. Some of y'all may agree with that. Some of y'all may not agree with that. Some people don't. Not everybody is meant to be a leader, but off the gate you can lead, period.
Mm-hmm.
Because even for good and bad, you lead. If you're doing wrong, you lead. If you're doing right, you lead somebody to that wrong or somebody to that right. And we need to put that more so in our kids' heads that, hey, you can do this. You can be this. You can do something positive.
Or the people that are our leaders out there who are the spokespeople, not for our whole race, but the people who stand up for injustice. I think amongst us, we have to realize that things have changed. Like, you know, before we did need the Huey Newtons and the, you know, the Jesse Jacksons and the Martin Luther Kings. But I think the scope of our whole generation, our environment, and how we communicate with each other has changed, and we need to evolve and stop just going old school and just sticking with that one way.
You know, one thing with Martin Luther King too is the funniest thing. Y'all have heard speeches from him, and it's always they make it so cushiony. You know what I'm saying with him, and they always throwing that "I have a dream" speech up in our face all the time. Nothing wrong with it. But when we going to wake up and live this reality that we're facing in our community right now? I have no problem with that. But when are we going to wake up and face this reality? Now, I have a clip right here, and I know we're going to clip y'all out today. But this one is about pride, and it's one thing that we need to speak upon also after this clip right here. Where's the pride at in our community? You know what I'm saying? When are we going to step up and have that pride that we once had before? This is Martin Luther King right here, and this is a rare speech. It's not that long. But this is a rare part of a speech that he did that they don't really let us hear that often. Some of y'all may have heard it. Some of y'all may have not heard it. But y'all check this out. This is the Middleman Talk Show on Blog Talk Radio. Here we go.
I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure, high, and clean. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful.
Now, how powerful was that right there?
Mm-hmm.
How powerful was that right there? When the last time y'all heard Martin Luther King on that level? Why they don't play that with more often?
You know what, I honestly... You know where that pride comes from? It came from one person not just stepping up. You can never deny what Dr. King did for the Civil Rights Movement and for Black America and really and truly America as a whole. But the one thing that he always acknowledged is that it was a collective effort. It wasn't just Dr. King. It was also Ralph Abernathy. It was Malcolm X. It was Medgar Evers. It was Rosa Parks. It was so many. And it's just like you said, people kind of just took him as a de facto leader. But it was so many other people that stepped up. It goes back to what Al and Jen were saying. The average person, that everyday person that has to deal with all this oppression has to step up. Do I think that we're going to get that pride back? When we have a great loss, I think we will. As a whole, when we have a great loss, or when something is taken from us. Because like I said, the only time we do have that pride, and the only time we do stand up, is when we feel like there's been an injustice done. It shouldn't have to get to that point, but unfortunately, that's where a lot of it is.
So it's emotional.
We think we made it.
We think we have absolutely
made it. And there's no one that can tell us any difference. We've made it. We got here. We can get in corporate America. I can do this. I can do that. I can get this record deal. I'm about to blow up. I'm about to put all my boys on. We're going to go up there, and we're going to spend more money on drugs and gambling and everything else. We'll spend more money on that than we do on educating ourselves in the business that we're in. You want to know where the black pride went? The black pride as a whole died a long time ago, because nowadays you got more brown skin under those KKK robes than you've ever had.
Yeah, it's true. I hate to say that. What are some of the solutions, Dan? What do y'all think are some of the solutions? To anyone that's listening on our phone lines or via the web, get into the conversation. We got, you know, a couple of minutes left here. We want to know what you guys think are some of the solutions to some of the questions that we posed today. What a solution, y'all? Just general.
We have to educate ourselves a lot more, and we have to educate our youth, because they're going to be the ones who are, you know, turning the tables for us into the future. You know, back when Whitney Houston was saying that she believed still in our future, we were those children then. So now it's time for us to continue that on for the next 20 years. So we got to do what we got to do to make sure that our youth know where we came from and what our grandparents wanted for us. Because my grandmother, she She worked hard. She fought hard.
You've seen that.
Witnessed a lot of things. You know? So, and I'm pretty sure all of our grandparents and great grandparents have witnessed and fought for things. And a lot of these things are, you know, becoming left unturned because we're being more content. We're settling for things, and we're not striving for, you know, future success or future greatness because we get frustrated. And then this me, myself, and I syndrome, man, that's going to be a tough thing to tackle, but it can be tackled.
I believe so also. Man, I think we had a great discussion, man. Let everybody know what we talked about tonight. And, you know, if you want to go back and listen to this whole show again, if you missed the beginning of it, you can go back to blogtalkradio.com/the middleman and check out this show. And not only this show, we have other shows archived about a gamut of topics that we cover. So y'all make sure y'all go back and check it out. But yeah, let them know what we talked about today.
The title of the day show, of course, is The New Negro. And we did a lot of compare and contrasting to the new Negro and the old Negro. And some of the clips in which we pointed out today pretty much expressed that. And, you know, we took a clip from the Boondock series with Martin Luther King when he woke up out of that coma. We also had a clip from a rare footage of Dr. Martin Luther King in 1957 discussing what his definition of the new Negro was. And also we played a clip on the rise and fall of the Jim Crow laws. And our last clip was, of course, Martin Luther King Jr. talking about black pride. And some of the questions that we dwelled on today was, has the new black man gained, well, what has the new black man gained in comparison to what has been lost? And does the new black man or woman desire to succeed in corporate America to justify his or her failure or lackness with the black family? And what if the old and new Negro met face-to-face? What would be their end result? How would their conversation be? And like Kevin said, go back and check out this particular show. It will be archived. We are going to feature this show. So when you click on our page, you will see this show first. So we really want y'all to pay attention and re-listen to this show. And send us an email or send us a comment on Facebook. You can email us at wearethemiddlemen@gmail.com. And make sure you entitle your comment in response to the new Negro show so we'll know what your email is about. And the same thing on the Facebook page. If you go to our The Middleman Talk Show page on Facebook, make sure you entitle that as well, too.
All right. Nick, are you ready for your talk of the town, man?
I'm always ready, man.
Matter of fact, before we even do that, man, let's announce this next show coming up this Thursday because we got a lot of people listening on the line, a lot of people listening on the web. Let them know what we got coming up this Thursday on the Talk of the Town. Everybody, y'all might want to tune in to this show. Let them know who our special guest is.
This coming Thursday on Talk of the Town with Nick Eaton, we have an R&B legend. And I'm going to tell you right now, because of him, I wish I'd never met her. Because she got me emotional out in the summer rain. Carl Thomas will be joining us this Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time.
Let's repeat that.
7 p.m. Central Time. 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Do I need to say it again?
Yes.
This coming Thursday, R&B legend Carl Thomas will be joining us on Talk of the Town, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Make sure you guys tune in. Brother's got a lot to talk about. We're going to give him an entire platform. We also have a couple of other guys coming in. We're going to talk about this whole thing about the state of male R&B. But we're definitely going to be talking with Carl Thomas. So make sure that you tune in this coming Thursday, 718-508-9972.
Tell a friend to tell a friend. Please tell a friend to tell a friend. All right, hello.
8 p.m.
Talk of the Town. Nick Eaton, y'all check it out.
What's up, world? This is your man, Nick Eaton, and I'm here with the Talk of the Town. T.I. is released from prison and sent right back in.
God damn it!
While he was released, from prison into a halfway house on Wednesday, T.I. was about to try to get his life back on track, because while he wouldn't have been an all-the-way free man, he would have had a set number of hours each day to get some work done. But now, because of a violation no one quite understands, Tip is stuck at the federal penitentiary in Atlanta until September 29th. Even T.I.'s lawyer has yet to get an exact explanation as to why authorities are making such a big deal of the fact that he rode from Arkansas to Atlanta in a tour bus, or how they allowed him to get on his violating bus ride to begin with.
Hey, keep it in the circuit!
Ray J.
Ugh. Idiot.
Ray J, spotted out with his new girlfriend last night in L.A., is ready for his sex tape with Kim Kardashian to come off of the market. According to Vivid Entertainment, the company who currently owns the tape, a mystery buyer has offered them $30 million to acquire the rights to the sex tape. The buyer will also like to purchase any other footage that Vivid may have that involves Kim, with the hopes of taking the sex tape off the market completely. TMZ caught up with Ray J last night to get his thoughts on the situation, and he claims that he would absolutely love for the tape to be taken off the market. Although he claims not to know who the potential buyer is, he thinks the tape is worth much more than $30
million. You must be out of your goddamn mind.
This is your man, Nick Eden, and this is the talk of the town.
Man, I don't know why people celebrating this dude getting out of jail.
I like T.I. I forgot. You're a T.I. I like T.I.
out of jail.
Yeah, I'm saying, man, I'm celebrating all the kids that graduated from Morehouse this past summer.
Thank you.
Me too, but you still can be like, well, that's good for T.I.
Clifford Harris getting out of jail?
Junior.
You
want
to know what's so funny? A young lady by the name of Cynthia won $500 on MediaTakeout.com because MediaTakeout ran a poll months ago, and they said whoever can predict when T.I. will go back into jail after he comes out will win $500, and she said less than one day. That was months ago. She won $500 on that. You tell me how crazy that is. The pay is crazy.
You should have entered that contest, Kevin. You might be $500 richer.
I could have been. I don't look down on a brother like that. He a family man.
You wouldn't have any faith.
I'm just saying, though, he a family man. You know what I'm saying? He take care of his business, but as far as him getting out of jail and everybody happy, I'm looking on the internet, everybody, the king is back. The king is out. I only know one king, and it's God.
Thank you.
That's it. I'm not celebrating. Just like when Gucci Man got out of jail. Everybody, Gucci is here. Man, forget these rappers.
Right.
Let's celebrate some doctors, some lawyers. Let's celebrate somebody with some type of education.
Well, my thing is, I'll say this much. I don't want anybody to be in jail any longer than they have to be. But I will say this. That whole free TIP, free Gucci, I don't believe in that. Like the T-shirts and all that stuff. No, let him do his time. Show these people that you cannot do what you want and think you can get away with it. Lil Wayne sat out there. I remember he did an interview on 2020 and said, I do what I want to and nobody can tell me anything. Less than a year later, he was in jail.
Yep, sure was.
I think that's very dangerous to say, and that's the kind of thing that, I don't know, I don't like that either.
Well, only thing I can say, celebrate our real heroes in our community, the people that's coming home from college, even though they can't find a job. Let's celebrate them.
Here's one. Celebrate the people that's handling that business.
Yeah. The people that you see, the mother and the father that's, you know, working two jobs to take care of their kids. Celebrate them. You know what I'm saying? The people that reach back and help other people. Y'all know what time it is. Yeah, one up, one down. We appreciate everybody for tuning in to the Middleman Talk Show today. I got a headache out of this world.
Me too.
I don't know what to do. But it's gone down, y'all.
Fuck.
The middleman shouted, beat Chris shouted. Yeah. Now I ain't sure what you was tuning in to. We'll pay attention to the real talk. What we here for, so take a listen time out. Take a minute. Shout it and learn some. Put your mind to grind the world. You destined to earn some. Linda, yeah. Comment on what you hear. Let's figure out that master plan to put this thing in gear. Don't matter if you hood or you corporate. Don't get you got a will to do way better than you were doing. Well, then you fortunate. Take a stand. Stop complaining about what you ain't got. Hating on the next man because he was dying to wreck shop. Every Sunday, tune in. Go live 6 p.m. blogtalkradio.com. The middle me. Hey. What's happening, the middleman? Hey, what's happening, the middleman? Hey, what's happening? BlogTalkRadio.com.
You know what? I just realized something.
What's that?
How much time has T.I. been in jail?
I really don't know. I don't care.
3 or 4?
About what? 3-4 years? All together?
I'm like that.
He did about 3-4 years together. Now, no disrespect to him nor Tyler, but he could have sent his wife to college and educated her in that amount of time. So
sure,
we don't have to hear her on the radio.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Wait a minute. Think about what you're saying, my dog. She got to go back to pre-K first.
Oh, Nick. You're so wrong.
I'm just saying, we got to get some basic English down first. That's all I'm saying.
I mean,
she need to go to
speech
class.
It's an embarrassment. I'm just keeping it real. Looking like a
She
pill.
Talked like she drank Thunderbird. I'm just saying.
Yes,
thank
did.
You.
Thank you. With Red Bull.
Right.
Just for real. But y'all make sure y'all tune in this Thursday. Call Thomas. Tell a friend and tell a friend and tell a friend. If you got any questions for Carl Thomas, write them down. Get them ready. Make sure y'all come over there and check out this show. How about this right here, y'all? I got something I want to play. It's too damn long for the show. Now, if y'all want to sit around and listen to this whole song, you can. But if you don't, good night to all, and all a good night.
Isn't that Christmas?
What? Just saying, man. I got one for you. This right here. Y'all done heard it before. This should get you in a mood of liberation. We need it. Got to fight against these folks. Not just white. I'm talking about our own. Rise up. Raise your fist up. Liberation. Long Talk Radio, the middleman.
hard to refrain from the host of cocaine, from them whores from the flame, from a post in the game. Makes it hard to maintain focus. Then from the Glock rounds and lockdowns and burials, the seeds that sow get devoured by the same locusts. Cause it's a hard road to hoe if your ass don't move and the rain don't fall and the ground is dry, but the roots are strong, so some survive. To your surprise, now my voice they cries. You got more juice than Zeus, slinging lightning trying to frighten plains dwellers of the Serengeti, but get beheaded when you foster dreaded. Melanin, silicone, and collagen injected. The second my pride, who the one gonna get it started? We be the lion hearted without infanticide. It's like that red sprite, you can't imagine. Unless you're looking at the canvas of life, not through the peephole of mortality. Single-minded mentality, getting over on loopholes, getting paid twofold on technicalities. Clicking your heels, scared to voice how you feel, packing steel, picking cotton from the killing fields with no total. I don't think we in Kansas, no moto. Midwest or dirty south, clean dress or dirty mouth. Whether robbing preachers or killing poor righteous teachers, you a scared demon, shouldn't be allowed to spread semen. And your cowardly lines never define the jackals of Babel. Running with they pack, tail between your legs, throw the mane on your head, say the story, as you downplay your glory, cackling, helping the shackling of your brethren happy, just by rapping, libertad, libertad, libertad.
Once again, thank you for listening to the Middleman Talk Show. Make sure you tune in this Thursday with Carl Thomas with the Middleman Talk Show. We appreciate you for taking this time out of your Sunday. You have listened to the Middleman Talk Show on Blog Talk Radio, and we out.